What is going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, Three and Out Podcast, back at it again. Monday afternoon, draft was fun, it's over, and you know, NFL, I tip my hat to you. The draft was awesome. Goodell crushed, the GMs crushed, all their little kids crushed, seeing the kids, the raw emotion, it was a fantastic three-day production, it really was. And we're going to dive into, you know, the thing I'm going to talk about off the top is the backup quarterbacks. And there are two really polarizing ones that went high with the Eagles and the Packers. And I just have some overall thoughts. I've been thinking all weekend about just people freaking out. And it's kind of crazy. And then the Dallas Cowboys, who still have this situation with Dak Prescott. Does it make more sense now to just play him on this one-year deal and see how he looks with an absolutely loaded offense? Because I think it might. And then we're going to dive into a lot more. You got Jameis signing with the Saints. Some just other thoughts I had on the draft. Some teams that jumped out. Dive into the Middlecoff mailbag, of course, at John Middlecoff. I'm going to need you now more than ever. Is my Instagram handle, at John Middlecoff, Instagram and Twitter. But my Instagram DM's wide open. I need you to slide up in there, and you can ask any question you want. And I will answer it here on the podcast. Again, this is a community-based show. And in the month of in quarantine, which at least where I'm from, doesn't look like it's getting lifted anytime soon, I'm going to depend on you. It's going to be a team effort. And everyone that has gone, I appreciate everyone that's done this. And if you haven't done this and you like the show, iTunes, go to where you can rate and review and just leave, you know, I'd appreciate a five-star review. Three and Out Podcast. And if you want to leave a couple words, that would also be greatly appreciated. But I wanted to start with this. I think the two most polarizing picks of the first two rounds were Jordan Love and Jalen Hurts. I think they got the most reaction on social media. I think they probably got the most reaction of just the fan base, either shaking their head or just it created emotion. And listen, in football circles, and the one thing I've learned working in the media, you know, when you're a scout, you take a lot of pride in talking about a guard or a linebacker because you spend a lot of time watching those guys. And when I go through the programs, like, I want to talk about this backup safety. When you get to the media, you realize, yeah, no one gives a shit, you know? I can't talk to you. Now, I can talk to you maybe about Trent Williams, but I can't talk to you about a fourth-round offensive lineman. You just won't care. But we can talk about quarterbacks till the cows come home. They are like NBA superstars. They are like rock stars. They are like actors. They are really, really famous. And when you mention one of their names, they create an emotion. You either like the pick or you don't, really more than any other picks. And I think two teams, we talked about my thoughts on Jordan Love being picked and Howie Roseman taking Jalen Hurts in the second round. And I was thinking about this. Since I've gone into business for myself, I have to pay insurance, right? I got to pay health insurance. I got to pay now my car insurance. I pay all these payments. And for a long period of time, like, you can be paying health insurance and I'd be healthy as a whistle. I guess it's clean as a whistle. But you can just be really healthy and never go to the doctor. You're like, what? I'm paying. My health insurance costs are really high. You know, I mean, it's closer to four figures than it is, you know, two figures. I'll promise you that. It's an expensive bill every year or just every month. But you get to some of these points and times where you have a weird feeling in your body or just something happens and you got to go check out, you got to go to the doctor. Hell, you may need to may rip my Achilles paying pick up basketball. And that insurance comes in pretty clutch, right? I'm a pretty good driver. I've never, ever been into an accident. But it's out of my control if someone T-bones me at a stoplight, right? And then you better believe you want to have car insurance. Now, I think legally you have to have car insurance, but still. Like, you can get away without paying it for a little while, but you better believe you're going to need it. And it's just, the backup quarterback is insurance. And we've seen when Rodgers went down and then been in a position where they weren't equipped to, you know, stay above water. We've seen Carson Wentz go down multiple times. One time they had Nick Foles. They ended up winning the Super Bowl. The following year, they won a playoff game. This year, they were in a position with a 40-year-old backup. And he tore his hamstring early in a playoff game, and they really had no shot. So you can't tell me that because everyone always says without hesitation, and it's correct, the quarterback is the most important position in all of sports. And we all go, yep, agree. Well, wouldn't their backup be really important too? And the thing with Jalen, unlike Jordan, is Jalen, listen, I'm not a Jalen Hurts truther. I don't think he throws the ball consistently well enough to be a good NFL starting quarterback. Now, I might be proven wrong. You know who does believe in the guy? Doug Peterson. You know what Doug Peterson is? One of the best offensive coordinators in the league. Won a Lombardi 3 years ago. Won a playoff game 2 years ago. Like, he knows what he's doing. Howie Roseman's built a Super Bowl team. Like, they got a pretty good idea what works and what doesn't work. One thing I know about Jalen is he can do other things. And I see, like, he can play a Taysom Hill role. He's a much... Taysom Hill, coming out of college, couldn't hold Jalen's jock. This guy ran for over 2,000 yards in the SEC and 24 touchdowns. Clearly what he did in the Big 12. Like, he is an instinctive runner. He's an elite runner of the football. Now, the throwing of the football needs to be worked on. Well, what is Doug Peterson? He's known as a quarterback guy. He was a quarterback. And you do have to have some insurance. You could say, well, you're paying all this money for, you know, Carson Wentz and Aaron Rodgers. Well, Aaron Rodgers is going to be 37 years old in December. And let's just call a spade, his arrow's pointing down. And there's just a lot of unknown with Carson. Yeah, the money's paid. It's a sunk cost. You're in bed financially with these two guys. That doesn't mean you should just wave the white flag and be like, you know, if Aaron Rodgers starts sucking these next couple years, we're screwed. No, we're not, actually, because we're equipped. You know why? Because we went through this 15 years ago. Well, this time around, because we're the Eagles, we've made the playoffs 3 straight years. You know, the first couple years, Carson went down, we were ready. This year, we were screwed. We're not going to be in that position again. We're going to be in a position, if Carson goes down and we're in a playoff game at home, we can win it. Because our backup quarterback is good. Again, in theory, that's what they believe. And I understand it. And I honestly support it. Because like, oh, why don't we should take a wide receiver there? You know, it's like, well, backup quarterback's more important than a rotational wide receiver. Because there's no guarantee the wide receiver's going to be good either. I saw him take a wide receiver 2 years ago in the second round. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. I don't know if the guy's any good. Now, I do know this. That Carson Wentz, we can say he's injury prone. We can say he's not injury prone. Whatever element you want to argue, he just goes down. And when he goes down, you have to be equipped. And the other thing with the Packers, Aaron Rodgers is now old. And his game, unlike Tom Brady, who is probably the most fundamentally sound player in the history of the quarterback position, his game aged well. Why? Because he has perfect feet. He throws from perfect positions. He gets rid of the ball very quickly. Aaron Rodgers fundamentally is pretty shitty. He throws off his back foot all the time. He bails on the pocket whenever he wants. And he gets away with it. Because his skill set, forever, he had arguably the best arm in the league. He was like the Dan Marino of this era. Well, his arm, do you notice, isn't quite as good. And last year, a couple balls that he's throwing off his back feet that used to hit wide receivers in their hands, maybe hit the DB in the helmet. Or maybe he airmailed the guy. And you can say, yeah, his stats were pretty good. But the eye test, we all watched him. He didn't quite look the same. So once the guy, you start getting you're as a general manager, as a head coach, you go, well, what if this guy is start trending the other way? Shouldn't we have a backup plan? Shouldn't we have a contingency? Just to get, if we get into a position where if next year he's dramatically worse than he was this year, our team isn't just screwed. So in 2 years, if he's just, you know, quote unquote shot, and you go, God, you're getting a little extreme, Middlecoff. Well, we're 2 years away from him being 38 years old. And I know we throw out these ages like it's no big deal anymore. I don't believe that. I believe Brady's an outlier, more of just the new norm. Same with Breeze. Rodgers plays a lot different than those guys. Rodgers' game is dependent on moving around. And anytime you move around, one, you're more susceptible to injury, and two, as your arm strength diminishes a little bit, it's going to be harder to make those throws. So you have a guy that you think can replace him, whether he gets hurt or whether he just starts sucking. Because, hell, Peyton Manning was kicking everyone's ass for 3 years until he wasn't, and then it was just over. He couldn't move or throw. Now, I don't know if Aaron Rodgers is going to have that precipitous of a drop-off, but I've seen crazier. It's like right now. If you've been on quarantine, just sitting on the couch in sweatpants all day, binging Netflix, and you have a real job or you run a small business, you're falling behind. Now, we're limited what we can do at home, but if you're not working on stuff, being creative, trying to keep the business alive, you're going to get lapped whenever this thing ends. Like, everyone worth their salt has been trying to figure out a plan, right? It's not ideal. It's not great. It sucks. We all want to get back to normal, but this is our reality right now. So anyone that runs a small business, I know, they've been trying every pitch in the book, just seeing if this works, seeing if that works, trying different stuff. And I see a lot of people, you know, on Twitter, they're like, oh, just binge another show on Netflix today. So you just sat on your ass all day? And you can send a couple work emails, act like you're working. We know a large percentage of people are not. And they're going to get exposed when this thing gets... This is not a vacation. This has just been an interruption. And I think sometimes teams can get in the just kind of in the slow lane. We just got our quarterback. After the quarterback showed you some signs of, you know, it's one thing if you have Phillip Rivers or Eli Manning. You know, guys that never miss games. You know, I can understand, like, yeah, do we need to draft a backup quarterback that high? But in the Packers and the Eagles situation, one guy has shown us. I think Colin said it on his Monday show. Carson Wentz has thrown four passes in the playoffs. Four. The Eagles have been to the playoffs three straight years. Rodgers just wasn't the same in 2019. Plus, he's old. Now, listen, they are financially tied to both those two individuals. But the contracts are signed. Like, once you do a business deal, that deal's the deal. Should you just stop worrying about what the repercussions might be if you don't pivot? Because you might have to. So, yeah, it's the milk spilled. Like, the contracts, the dead cap, and it's set. Should you just wave the white flag if that player is either gets old or gets injured again? I don't think you should. And I think the best organizations are always ready. And forever, Ron Wolf and Andy Reid, they always got this credit. Like, they're always drafting quarterbacks, like, every other year. And now when teams do it, it's like, oh, they're just idiots. Morons. Well, I thought Jordan Love was a top 15, 20 talent in this draft. And they got him in the late 20s. Jalen, who I'm not as high on, I do. They are. Like, they believed in him. So, listen, would I have taken him there? No. But if you believe in the guy and think he can be a starting quarterback in the NFL, is it worth taking him there, especially given your situation with your quarterback and his durability? Yes. No issue. Like, they believe that. I haven't won a Super Bowl. They have. So my point is, I understand it. Everyone's freaking out like you're just gonna 100% land Devontae Adams or Bobby Wagner in the second round. That's just not the way it works. For as great as the first round looks, and basically every player except maybe two or three felt like, damn, that's a good pick. That's a good pick. That's a good pick. We know 50% of them are just going to be average to below average players. I would say 10 to 15 of them or 10 to 12 of them won't have their fifth year option picked up. If you don't have your fifth year option picked up, you're a miss. That's what we consider a whiff. That's a whiff. Like Trubisky, Solomon Thomas, those type of guys that won their fifth year option, that's a miss. And, you know, I guess overall, sometimes you got to take a step back, take a deep breath, and drafting quarterbacks high, even when you have an established quarterback, when the guy has some red flags on him, given the quarterback that you have, regardless how much you're paying him, it's not as crazy as everyone acts like it is on social media. I think the Cowboys have a couple things working for them right now. When you have a bunch of friends who go through divorces or crazy relationships, even though you're not dating them, if it's your close friend, especially like in college or fresh out of college when he's your roommate, you kind of experience the relationship. Now, you don't experience all of it, right? You're not actually sleeping with her. You're not going on one-on-one dinner dates. But you see her a lot, and you see it, and you hear all the stories from him. So eventually, when they get divorced, or when it gets rocky, you understand why. So when you're looking for a girlfriend, or thinking about getting married, you can balance some of the things you've heard. Now again, you don't know everything that's going on, but you kind of get a front row seat in college, and out of college, when you have some roommates, of what works and what doesn't in a relationship, and kind of what you want. Well, the Cowboys in the NFC have seen multiple teams pay for quarterbacks. The Rams, if they could do it over again, you bet your ass they would not have given Jared Goff that much money. I like Jared Goff, but in no world is he a $110 million guaranteed quarterback. Zero. Again, I'm a fan. Could not give him that much money. Carson Wentz, who while I do believe he is a quote-unquote max-level quarterback, the Eagles just showed they had to take a quarterback in the second round. Which, as I said earlier, I understand. But ideally, if you're giving a guy in his mid to, you know, 26, 27-year-old quarterback $100-plus million, you like to be set at quarterback forever. But some of the injuries. Now, I don't think Dak has much in common with Carson Wentz, because Carson Wentz, as you saw last year, can just carry a team of scrubs. That's just, they have nothing in common, actually. But I think when you look at Jared Goff and you look at the Rams, you go, I don't want to do that. Well, now this year with the Cowboys, and I give Jerry Jones credit, he drafted CeeDee Lamb in the first round. He easily could have taken a defensive player, but he went with the best player on his board. And I think for me, CeeDee Lamb is probably a top 10 player in this draft. I actually see zero chance that he fails. I think he's going to be a really good player. I think when the dust settles in 3 or 4 years, CeeDee Lamb is the number one wide receiver for the Cowboys. And Amari's, you know, quote-unquote overpaid number two. But I like Amari too. Or an overpaid, yeah, you wouldn't pay a number two that much money. But if Amari's your number two, you're in really good shape. But here's the thing. I don't want to dive deep in with Dak when I already have some questions. Because if I didn't, I'd already be married to him. I'd already given him the money. Clearly the Cowboys have second thoughts about how much Dak Prescott's worth. Now they're in a position where they have another sweet wide receiver. Amari's under contract. Zeke's under contract. Got a bunch of defensive players under contract. Have a new coach. What's the rush to pay Dak? Why not just let this thing play out? Play him on the franchise tag. And if he gets it done, if you win the division, if you win some playoff games, then, you know, maybe you got to overpay him. What if you go 8-8 again? What if you miss the playoffs? What if you can't beat Carson Wentz? What if you can't beat the good teams in the NFC? Let's pump the brakes. Like, to me, this draft pick now allows you, let's just see this thing out. What is the rush? You've seen other teams. You just saw the Rams gave a guy all that money, and he can't carry the franchise. And I like Dak. If you had to say, would you rather have Dak Prescott or Jared Goff? I might lean Jared Goff. And it would be tight. I'd probably have to study it. But to me, they're kind of in the same realm. I am not into giving, and I am not into paying premiums for players that aren't premium picks. It's just like, I'm not into getting married to someone I don't want to get married to. We all know a ton of people who have gotten married to people they don't even like and are miserable. I know a lot of people get married to the right person and are really happy. But the great part about life, like in a relationship, like with a quarterback, no one's putting a gun to your head. This is America. You can do whatever you want. No one says that you have to pay the quarterback. And when you think about it, whatever Dak's going to get this year, 27, I think, 28 million. If you factor it over a five-year period, because the first 4 years were nothing, and this year, it's really not even that much money. So when you factor in, you know, spreading that cost out technically over 5 years, the way you look at it, because you haven't paid him anything, he was a fourth-round pick, still a steal. And if it turns out this year he's just not good enough, and McCarthy goes, yeah, just I think we can do better. Your team's equipped to go find a guy. Either draft a guy, a plug-and-play quarterback. Every year, especially now, there are more good quarterbacks in the league that their spots. You know, this year Jameis was available. Next year, maybe Derek Carr is available. Maybe you can trade up, mortgage a bunch to go get a sweet rookie. You have options. There are a lot of functional quarterbacks in the NFL right now. And I don't think we have any evidence that Dak is some star. Now, he's not a bad player. I would say he's above average. But we've seen, like, Kirk Cousins is above average. They gave him $86 million, and then they gave him 60 more. They're never going to do anything in the playoffs, ever. Hell, he won a playoff game. We're still like, yeah, I just don't see it. And I like Dak probably a little more than Kirk Cousins. But still, if you're in that conversation, I struggle with it. I really do. Like, the one, I wouldn't like Jimmy Garoppolo as much if they were paying him $120 million guaranteed. They paid him $70. So it's like, his contract's not bad. He makes $23 million next year. If Jimmy was making 35 and the 49ers couldn't have re-signed, you know, Jimmy Ward, I'd have some issues with the contract. But right now, Jimmy, you know what Jimmy Garoppolo is? Properly paid. That's really what he is. Jared Goff, not properly paid. And right now the Rams are in a pinch. Now you think the Cowboys, you'd be like, well, they already got a bunch of players under contract. You pay. Well, the problem is once you pay Dak in next year and in years coming, you got to cut some of the good players you have on your team. Because the way the cap, and he'll take his number would take up so much of the cap space. So I'm all for CeeDee Lamb. Props to you, Jerry. Great pick from your $250 million yacht. I'm rooting for you to make a playoff run. But I would not be in the quote-unquote overpaying Dak business right now. Let's just play this year out. What's Dak going to do? Not show up? I mean, $28 million is dramatically more money than he's ever seen in his life as an NFL quarterback. He'll be there. And it actually behooves him. He's in a weird spot. Like, does he hold out? Well, so do he hold out and then come in week one not knowing the offense? He's the quarterback. Well, if he looks like crap, no one's going to pay him. And I've had a lot of people DM me and ask me, why didn't they let him hit the free agent market? Well, I think they were a little nervous because anytime you let a guy hit free agency, he might not come back, and then what would they do? But that might have been the prudent move. Who was going to pay Dak $100 million? Maybe Gruden, but probably not. I don't really see where would he have gone? Now the Cowboys, not to me, they got some leverage now. Our team's stacked, play on the franchise tag, and we'll reconvene after the season when we figure out how well we do. One thing that happened over the weekend that, as someone that covers the Niners very closely, for someone that knows a bunch of people in that organization, for someone that I just talk about that team more than any other team, I didn't see Trent Williams ended up on the team. I mean, that was wild. I sat down on my couch. I slept in on Saturday. And I got up probably like 8. The draft started, I think, for me, was it at 10 a.m.? Yeah, I think it was at 10 a.m. Maybe it was at 9 a.m. Maybe it was at 9 a.m. Whatever the time it started in the morning, I had a cup of coffee. I just sat down on my couch. I was gonna watch just the fourth round, you know, just for a couple hours casually before I went on a walk or something. And I looked down at my phone, and Rap Sheet tweets that the 49ers have acquired Trent Williams. And I swear to God, I thought that, like, I'm not even awake yet. I'm not reading this right. And I kind of like, I flip my phone, Twitter off, and I load it back up, and I go to his Twitter account, and it was real. And I think it was one of the more shocking things of the weekend. Now, I had heard last week that Joe Staley had been contemplating retirement. And anyone that hasn't done it, he put out a retirement letter that was about as well thought out and powerful of a retirement letter as you're going to see. And Joe Staley, to me, is everything you want in a franchise cornerstone. Was he ever the best player on the field? No. But what he was is he was one of the more reliable players always on the field. And that guy, really the 4 Harbaugh years, probably are the equivalent to like 6 or 7 years, just from factoring in violence and the way that Harbaugh played. Well, this season with Kyle Shanahan turned into that. How violent just the 49ers are and what they ask of all their players. Like, the games are just kind of a war zone. I mean, they're trying to not just beat you, they're trying to kick your ass. And Joe's body kind of broke down. His leg snapped. His fingers were shattering. Turns out his neck was hurting. I mean, he's 36 years old. He's a weathered NFL player. 13 years in the trenches going up against the best players. And for a long period of time, every day in practice, Alden Smith, Justin Smith, Ray McDonald, and then all the guys always in the division with Seattle. Chandler Jones has been in the division for a while. The Rams have guys. It's just a physical position. So I thought the reason I thought he would come back was simply because, you know, the Niners are going to have a chance to win the Super Bowl this year. And he's been to 2 and he's lost both. But clearly his body can't take it anymore. And I think that he did not want to end his career. And he's going to be whoever your favorite team is. You know, he's just he's that guy that's going to be part of the organization, like the media team, maybe become like the assistant GM. I don't know what he's going to be, but he's going to be a huge part of the Niners moving forward. I just don't think he wanted to end his career either in an air cast or a cart, because that's why I think what he was thinking might end that way. But somehow, one of the best players the Niners have had in the last 2 decades, they upgraded the position. And I know Colin last year thought the next Bill Belichick was going to be Kyle Shanahan. And, you know, it turns out he's kind of right. But one area which they are dramatically different is, in a weird way, Kyle's a player's coach. He's a little bit more modern. I actually think he's more like Bill Walsh than Bill Belichick. Like, players rave about Belichick, how smart he is, but they all kind of fear him. They all know that he's going to get rid of him. I think players really respect Kyle and don't fear him that way. Now, as Kyle would show, he traded DeForest Buckner. He cut Navarro Bowman. But a huge reason that Trent Williams is on this team, Minnesota had a better offer. They were also going to give Trent Williams a raise. He said, no, I'm not going to do it. My theory was he was not, I think Kirk Cousins played a part in that. He's already been in a huddle with that guy. He knows you can't win a Super Bowl or win big with that guy. And the money, you don't hold out for a year when you're already super rich just because of money. It's on principle. It's on, I can't stand the Redskins. I'm taking control of my life. A little like Gronk did a couple years ago. Now, you got to be a really good player to be able to pull this off. You also, in a league where it's hard to become financially secure, have to have made some money. And like Gronk, when Belichick was like, you know what? I'm trading you to one of the joke franchises in the league with my clown former defensive coordinator and Bob Quinn that doesn't know what's going on. And Gronk says, you know what, Belichick? Kick rocks. I'll retire before I play for them. And Belichick couldn't do anything. And Trent Williams last year was like, listen, I'm out, guys. I'm out. And they, I don't know the team, but you know, there were a bunch of rumors. They clearly could have got more for him last year. First round picks were being thrown around, definitely multiple twos. Now, again, we don't know if Trent Williams would have been willing to be like, yeah, I'll go play for the Houston Texans or I'll go play for the Cleveland Browns. Because I would say, based on his actions, when he told Minnesota, it's not like Minnesota's the Lions. They've made the playoffs, what, 4 of the last 5 years? Might be 5 of the last 6. They've been one of the more consistent winning teams in the league for the last half decade. They got a really good coach. They have good players on offense. They have had pretty consistent players on defense. They've had one of the better defenses in the league. They're just a well-run operation. He said, no. It was basically, I'm playing for Kyler, I ain't playing. Because he didn't have to give up much. And the Niners aren't even giving him a raise. So it clearly wasn't about the money. It was about principle. And somehow when the dust settles, the Niners end up, they got rid of Buckner, and they end up with Kinlaw, second best interior defensive lineman in this draft. They end up with Brandon Ayuk, who to me is a top 30 player in this draft and a guy that can be really, really good. And they end up upgrade their left tackle position. Now, the guy hadn't played in a year, but texting around the league that everyone said that evaluated him, my buddies that are pro scouts, used the word, yeah, he was still arguably the best left tackle in the league in 2018. Now, you never know, but sometimes for a guy, he's 31, 32, he's not 36, 37, he still should have a couple years left. And I think the Niners are going to have options. If he plays great, you extend him. If he shows his shot, you didn't give up that much. It was a well worth risk taking. Also a very, very ballsy move, because back to Kyle Shanahan, Joe Staley told him I was going to retire. That was the crazy part about what the 49ers did. They knew Staley was not going to show back up. So with the 13th pick, they traded back a spot to give the Tampa Bay Buccaneers a potential tackle. Now, there's some arguments with Worf. Is he a tackle or is he a guard? Still, the 49ers could have traded back and taken another tackle. I mean, they knew they needed a left tackle. Talking to some people around the Niners, they were hoping the Williams thing was going down. They were working on it, but there was no guarantee. They kind of just rolled the dice. And I know this. If the Trent Williams deal had fallen through and Staley had retired and they had taken Kinlaw and Ayuk and not landed a tackle, they would have been in some trouble. Because you cannot win a Super Bowl with a crappy left tackle. They couldn't have done it. And it would have been basically impossible to land one. Unless they were going to trade a lot of high-round picks for some sweet player. But who's the sweet player that would be available? They'd be impossible to find. Now, Kyle did a good job last year with backup tackles when McGlinchey and Staley were hurt. But it's another thing playing an entire season. I mean, Joe Staley still started all the playoff games. Still started Week 17 in Seattle. Like, you need Joe Staley. So that was, to me, the most shocking thing that happened on Saturday is somehow the 49ers lost Joe Staley, one of the most consistent guys, in franchise history, who's not going to be like, I don't think Joe Staley's a Hall of Famer, and ended up with potentially a Hall of Famer for a third-round pick. Next year, third-round pick. All they had to give up this year was a fifth-round pick. And the way that it's been described to me, when you give a future pick, you usually divide, like, take a 20% discount. So a third-round pick this year is actually worth, a third-round pick the following year is worth 30% less, 20 to 30%, depending on the team, next year. So pick, if I'm giving you pick 45 this year, right, going into the draft, that pick is just worth 45, whatever it is on the value chart. Well, if I'm giving you a third round next year, You don't know the exact pick, right, because you don't know what my record's going to be. And that's why most teams somewhere between 20 and 30%. So if the pick is worth on the value chart, I'm just going to use an even number, 100 points, that what you're giving them is actually only worth 70 to 80 points when it's a future pick. Same with first rounders. So that's the way I've been told teams, you know, dictate or value, you know, when you're dictating these terms for a deal. The future picks are never as worth as much as the present picks. And I think sometimes we get confused on that. I know I have in the past. But yeah, the 49ers have Trent Williams as starting left tackle. Okay, before we dive into the Middlecoff mailbag, I want to do a couple things. One, I guess the big news of, was it Sunday, that Jameis Winston signed with the Saints? I give Jameis a lot of credit because there are countless, like, is Jameis Winston better player than Kirk Cousins? Is Jameis Winston a better player than Derek Carr? I mean, I think these are fair questions to ask. Now, you could counter and say, no, they're not. He throws way more picks than them. And maybe he's just going to be a lifetime interception guy. But I know he's a more explosive passer than both those two guys. So if I could ever get the picks down, he's just a more explosive player. I mean, he was a number one overall pick for a reason. Won a national championship for a reason. He's a very, very talented individual. And I think the most head-scratching part about Jameis's career, remember David Shaw told me once, they had some questions like about his maturity, but he's like, yeah, he was an academic qualifier to Stanford. Like Stanford ain't Alabama, ain't Ohio State. Like they can't get anyone into school. They have minimums for academics when it comes to GPA and SAT scores, and Jameis hit him easily. Jameis is really smart. He's just reckless. And, you know, going to the Saints does a couple things. One, it gives him the chance to resurrect his career. Take a step back. Take a deep breath, get around Sean Payton, get around Drew Brees, and just kind of see things from a different view. It also puts him in a position that if things go well, Drew Brees, for who knows why, already has a contract with NBC. He is more than likely going to retire at the end of the season, go work in television. Well, then what are the Saints going to need? They're going to need a quarterback. Because do you know what the Saints have told you now back-to-back years? Taysom Hill is not our backup quarterback. He's our role player, does a little bit of everything. Our backup quarterback was Teddy Bridgewater, and now it's Jameis Winston. And here's what I know we can do if Drew Brees goes down. I know we can win with Teddy, and we should be able to win some games with Jameis. And I think Jameis is going to be in a good position if Drew and Sean Payton are signing off on him. Can you imagine if Drew goes, God, I'm telling you, Sean, this guy, I like this guy. Like, he's going to be able to put in the good word. Sean's going to be working with him every day. Who's to say that Jameis Winston won't, he's only 26 years old, won't be the Saints starting quarterback for the next half decade? Sean Payton just told you what he thought. He thought he had the chance to take Jordan Love at 24 and he chose Jameis Winston. That's what he did. It's just, I mean, to me, it's that simple. Because a couple years ago, he was going to take Mahomes. This year, Jordan Love fell right to him. He said, yeah, I don't think he's that good. And the Packers do, and we'll see. I actually kind of like Jordan Love. But he'd rather have Jameis Winston. And I don't totally blame him. I don't totally blame him at all. I texted around on some good and bad drafts. The one name that stood out to me was the Falcons. And I think it starts with that first pick. Now, I have talked with people that said that they thought A.J. Terrell, like, they liked him. They just thought he was a second-round player. But they passed on CeeDee Lamb. And the Cowboys, who were in a very, very similar position about, right, they needed other things, they did not force a need. They just picked what they thought was the best player on their board, a.k.a. CeeDee Lamb. Why didn't the Falcons take CeeDee Lamb? Like I said over the weekend, I wasn't a fan of the Arizona Cardinals taking Isaiah Simmons. Now, in fairness, like they got Eno Benjamin, the little wide receiver, the little running back from Arizona State in the seventh round. I like, you know, Benjamin. That's a pretty good seventh round pick. But I just can't get behind. Not that I understand the pick because those picks have worked for Arizona in the past. Just Vance Joseph, Cliff Kingsbury. And everyone keeps saying this. You got to watch out for the Cardinals. You got to watch out for the Cardinals. Can we pump the brakes? Cliff Kingsbury couldn't win squat in the Big 12. which basically beside Oklahoma and like Iowa State and a little bit of Oklahoma, that conference has been trash. Couldn't win more than seven games. He had Patrick Mahomes. And now his defensive coordinator is terrible. How's he going to win in the NFC West with Pete, Kyle, and even Sean McVay? I don't love the Rams. Though, what I was told is like people that I know in the league like Cam Akers, the running back from Florida State. But I think the problem is the dude they drafted last year, I think in the third round of running back, they don't even like. Is Les Snead a good general manager? Because I don't think he is. Is there a chance? I got a hot take. Sean McVay will have a new general manager next year at this time. Les Snead will not be the GM. Because I think the Rams, they've lost a lot of players. As a buddy of mine in the league texts me, their offensive line stinks. I mean, stinks. They lost Corey Littleton, who was a big-time cover guy who's now on the Raiders. Who's going to play middle linebacker for him? The problem with having a bad offensive line for the Rams, their quarterback can't move. He's not an athletic guy. He can't get away. Now, the one thing, one positive I heard was, I got this from multiple people, everyone was impressed with the Browns draft. So, you know, now the Browns, they've had a good offseason last year. They had a good draft this year. To me, the Browns' problem has not been talent over the years. It's been coaching has been underwhelming. It's been their players, like the talent hasn't matched up what we've seen on the games. Like, is Baker Mayfield, what's he going to do over quarantine? Is he eating cheeseburgers or is he drinking protein shakes, getting lifts in, and studying the film? You know, to me, it's going to come down to Baker Mayfield's maturity, but their team is very, very talented. The Chiefs had a really good draft. I mean, the little running back, the linebacker's good. I think most of the teams in the first round, I like most of their picks. I would say the one glaring, you know, what's going to be interesting is Raider fans think that they've equipped this good team. I just don't know if they have enough blue chip players. There's going to be a lot of pressure on Derek Carr to play well. He's going to have to look like the 2016 version because he just can't. I mean, Gruden ain't going to go another year without making the playoffs and not have a quarterback change. Now he drafted all these weapons. Some guys that I've heard, you know, I've gotten a couple like, I don't know if I love that guy in Vegas. So it's going to be interesting. Gruden's got a little Al Davis to him. Takes, guys on the fringe character-wise. We'll see, you know, Arnett, the dude Bowden from Kentucky. Not bad guys, but, you know, dudes just a little, not perfect pass. We'll see. You know, Vegas, it's gonna test the franchise. You know, it really is, but it's going to be fun. So let's dive into the Middlecuff mailbag. Okay, what round did Shea Patterson go in? Last I saw today on Twitter is that Shea Patterson didn't even sign as an undrafted free agent with anyone. Think about this. Michigan had, I think, 10 players drafted. Only LSU had more. Think how embarrassing that is. Listen, I'm a Harbaugh guy, but talent ain't their problem right now. They have to win more games. Jim, you have to get a quarterback. You can't be playing with Shea Patterson, who wouldn't even start in the AAF. The XFL would have laughed at him. You need to get a legitimate NFL-type player because you have talent everywhere else. You're not going to win anything, and that conference is too good. Ohio State, Wisconsin, James Franklin at Penn State, hell, Iowa. It's a big boy conference. Second-best conference in the country by a mile. It's the SEC and the Big Ten. Then the other conferences all kind of just stink. Thank God Big 12 has Oklahoma, and the Pac-12 has the Ducks, and the ACC has Clemson, because the three conferences are struggling right now. But God, Shea Patterson, what a scrub. What happens with Cam, Jameis, and Dalton now? Well, Jameis is on the Saints. Do they all become backups, or does Cam get a one-year prove-it deal? Where is Cam's one-year prove-it deal? Dalton, to me, you know, a team will take him as a backup. I could see if he takes a pay cut, you know, a Gruden take him as a backup, Jacksonville take him as a backup, you know, the Cowboys, Seattle, who knows? Someone will take Andy Dalton. Cam, I don't know. I can't even give you a prediction. I have no clue because I can't see Cam Newton being a backup, and I don't totally blame him. The Palace at Auburn Hills has to be a top five all-time name for a pro sports arena. What do you think some others are? The Palace at Auburn Hills. I would say the Rose Bowl would be one. I'd say Lambeau. I'd say Wrigley Field. I'd say Fenway. I'd say probably some cool hockey arenas. The Big House, pretty sweet. Cameron Indoor. You know, now everything's so corporate, so it's like they're all named by different things. Middlecoff Mailbag. Can you go into depth about what the draft means to Derek? Clearly make or break year, but also Gruden has three off seasons to replace him and never has. Well, I think there's a pretty good chance that they couldn't, you know, upgrade the position. They didn't like Jordan Love more than Carr. Very understandable. Derek Carr's better. They needed to get him wide receivers. They draft Ruggs in the first round. Then they draft the kid from Kentucky and the kid from South Carolina. I think Edwards and Bowden Jr. Bowden Jr., I like that guy from Kentucky. Edwards, I don't know that much about. Those highlight tape look pretty good. And you get Terrell Williams. You get Darren Waller. You have Josh Jacobs. You have a good offensive line. Like the Raiders should be a top 10 offense next year. And that's just not on Derek. That's on Gruden. Like, to me, Gruden, I expected this some dynamic guy, kind of like an Andy Reid, Sean Payton. To me, Gruden's kind of boring as a coach. He wants to just like pound the rock and be conservative. Now, maybe that's because of Derek, but you get Henry Ruggs. Like Nick Saban once was boring and conservative. Well, what did he do the last couple years with all those cats? Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, Devontae Smith, and Waddle threw the ball all over the place. So part of signing sweet wide receivers, you got to start throwing the ball. It's not 2002 anymore. Michael Pittman and Mike Alstott ain't walking through that door. Now, you can run the ball. I like Josh Jacobs, but they tried last year and he got hurt. You got to throw the football. Look at the Chiefs. Look at what Elway did. Drafted Jeudy, then drafted Hamler. Last year, drafted Fant and Locke. They got Melvin Gordon and Philip Lindsay. Like, they're going to try to score points. Score points. Hey, John, watching the Jordan doc, and I was observing how much more athletic and skilled the league is now compared to the 90s. Feels like mostly everyone can shoot and dribble. That being said, the 2017 Warriors have to be the best team of all time. Closing lineup, Steph, Clay, Kevin Durant, Draymond, and Iggy. Any other teams come close? Yeah, I don't think they would just be some lock to beat the 96 Bulls. I think anytime you got Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and the Worm, you'd have a pretty good chance. Phil Jackson's dramatically better coach than Steve Kerr, too. I actually think that the people act like the league is that much better now. Better athletes, maybe. The league's pretty athletic back then, too. You know, I mean, Michael's a better athlete than anyone in the league now. So, it's a good question. I was listening to you and Guy on the other podcast, and you mentioned All-22. What is the All-22? It's basically just the tape that the coaches watch, so you can see every player. Anytime you hear a media guy talk about a corner, a wide receiver, or a safety, if they don't have the All-22 tape, they're full of shit. Because you can't evaluate a corner, a wide receiver, or a safety without the All-22. Even sometimes a linebacker leaves the tape. Now, I can evaluate a running back off TV copy. I could evaluate, you know, probably a center off TV copy. It's tight end and lineman, maybe, but it gets tough. To do a true evaluation, you need to have a TV. You need to have the All-22. What do you think the Cardinals drafting Simmons over a top tackle with the 8th pick? I have a feeling a major reason for that is to have a man to stop Russell Wilson from doing his late-game heroics, for example. Yeah, I think it's a guy to spy Russell Wilson, a guy to chase George Kittle. I mean, those are four games right there. And last year, the Niners beat him twice. Actually, I think Arizona beat Seattle one game, right? I like the guy in theory, that he is a versatile chess piece, but you have to have a defensive coordinator to use them. Brett Venables, the defensive coordinator for Clemson, makes $2.2 million. He's the best defensive coordinator in all of college football. He's probably a top five or six defensive coordinator in the country. You'd go Zimmer, Belichick, no order. Fangio. I mean, it's a short list. Venables. I mean, I might be missing someone, but he's probably a top five defensive coordinator in America. And that's the guy that used him. If A-Rod demanded a trade, what would be the minimum that the Packers would have to get back for them to do it? Maybe not this year because everyone is set, but next offseason. you know, with his age and his money, it's, I don't even think it's possible with the amount of dead cap. Now, I'd have to ask a cap guy, can you move money around? I don't know exactly how it would work to facilitate it, but let's say he demanded a trade. Could he take a pay cut to make the dead cap less and then they could trade him? I think they'd give him around for a first round pick. I mean, he's 37 years old. I'd give him away for a first round pick if he wanted out and I was ready to move on. Hope you enjoyed the draft as much as we all did. I got a question for you. Since the Raiders came into 2019 season with hopes of forming their playbook around AB, would it be fair that since they drafted Ruggs, they could blow the dust off that playbook and just plug and play? Another small question to add. Who was your what the fuck pick of the draft and why? I would say the Ruggs thing, he's a little different. I mean, AB was, you know, had six straight of the best years we've seen in NFL history at wide receiver. But I do think some of their concepts, I'm sure that they wanted to use with AB, yes, they can use with Ruggs. Some of the deep breaking routes. I mean, Ruggs, to compare to AB is not fair to Ruggs. AB was just in the peak of his powers. But I'm with you. Yes, they could add some of that. My WTF pick of the first round probably was the Raiders, that corner, just because I hadn't talked to one person and thought that guy was going to go in the first round. It's one thing to go like 24th when no one had been talking about you. It's another thing to go 19. I would say the Raiders, you know, it might be Jordan Love, but just because the Packers took him, but we expected Jordan Love to go. I expect him to go in the top 20. Honestly, kind of fell. I think the Raiders have had kind of two of the WTF picks of the last 2 years. Cleveland Farrell and then David Arnett. Now, I think they'd argue, well, if we're taking the WTF picks, we're taking them from Ohio State and Clemson. And that is the one thing the Raiders have done under this administration with Gruden and Mayock, is they only draft guys from like Ohio State, Bama, and Clemson. I think they have 8 Clemson players on their team from the last 2 years. Think about that. Thoughts on the Bears draft. Where do you put them in the division? I read a good article by Dan Pompey on the tight end that they took from Notre Dame. I'll be completely honest, I didn't know that much about him. Everything I had read is it was a shitty tight end draft. I talked to a buddy that works for the Bears staff. He's like, we like this guy a lot. Clearly they like the guy a lot. Take him in the second round. Dan Pompey. He talked to 20 league executives, so 20 different teams, and only one team didn't have the guy in the top 3 rounds. The majority of teams said that they would have taken him in the second round. So if that guy's good, they desperately need a tight end. I'm trying to think. Oh, then they took the corner from Utah. Like the guy a lot. Tall, long, physical corner, press corner. I like Jalen Johnson a lot. So I didn't know much about the tight end. Reading the article, people like him. I know the Bears like him. Jalen Johnson, good player. Don't know anything about the other guys. Their next pick was the 5th round. God, the Bears had a crazy draft. Did not have a 5th round pick. Had 2 second round picks. Then did not have a 3rd round pick or a 4th round pick. That's what happens when you got to double down. To me, the key with the Bears is going to be simple. Can the quarterback play improve? Like last year out of Trubisky, you're screwed if that's the level of quarterback play you're going to get. What do you think of the Jordan Brooks pick? As a Seattle fan, I felt it was a bit of a reach and an overdraft, and it's not even a position of need. Taking a run-stopping linebacker in the first round doesn't make sense for them. What do you think? Well, I'm a big believer if the guy can be a three-down linebacker. I'm not drafting a guy in the first round that can't be a three-down linebacker. Now, I'd be lying to you if I studied the guy from Texas Tech. I did not. I knew about the two guys that felt like first-round players, which were Kenneth Murray and Patrick Queen. I would have taken both those guys in the first round. Now, they took Jordan Brooks over Patrick Queen. But this guy ran a 4.54, so this guy can move, and he's a good athlete. Now, you say it's not a need. Well, you need multiple linebackers. Look at the 49ers. They have multiple good linebackers. Look at last year, the Rams had a couple linebackers. Like, good teams typically have multiple speed linebackers. Chiefs are somewhat of an outlier. But they pass on Patrick Queen for this guy, which will be, you know, a pretty dissected, you know, pick, just given who they passed on. They took a linebacker and they passed on what I think many thought was the better linebacker. Here's the thing. Look at their division. The 49ers want to run the football. The Rams want to run the football. And to beat those two teams, like, that's like their main competition. Now, I'm with you. I'd have to do some recon on this guy. I was not as familiar with him as the other two linebackers were taking the first round. Now, if you look at John Schneider's career, started scolding hot when he drafted the first couple years he was in Seattle with Pete. You know, from Okuns to Bobby Wagners to Russells to Richards to Cam Chancellors to Earl Thomases to the Irvins to the Byron Maxwells to the Jeremy Lanes. Like, he couldn't miss. I mean, just Sweezy's, he was just hitting on them all. Trading a fourth round pick for Marshawn, Doug Baldwin. I mean, he was hot. He's been a little hit or miss lately. And I'm a big John Schneider guy, but it's going to be tough. This guy's got to be good. Because last year, the guy they drafted in the first round, the pass rusher, I think he's from TCU, he was a healthy scratch all season long. And what position were they in desperate need of? Pass rusher. Now, I would assume that they bring back Clowney, but they need that guy they drafted last year in the first round to not suck. Teams have drafted and then also signed free agent players who didn't get drafted. Two questions. Is the strategy for these signings to see if they might get lucky with a free agent? Two. Many say these players care practice. These players are practice squad players. How many practice squad players can the team have? Oh, is there a signing strategy assigning the free agent players? You can have 10 practice squad players, but you can have a 90-man roster right now. I think the key with undrafted free agency is, if you're an undrafted free agent wide receiver, you're not going to go to a team that just drafted two wide receivers because those guys aren't going to get cut over you. Now, if you're a free agent running back and you look at a team's depth chart and you go, well, they got an old running back and one other guy they drafted last year and they didn't draft a running back this year, that's a good spot. So to me, as an undrafted free agent, you want to go to a spot where you have a chance to make the team or a spot where you might have a relationship with a coach, a coordinator that's going to coach you. You get pretty lucky. You know, if you thought the guy was good, you would have drafted him. So whenever you see a team that hits on an undrafted free agent, they like the guy, but to think that they knew that guy was going to be good. And every year you see, I think on average, you know, two plus undrafted free agents make every team. You know, some teams have like three or four, some teams have none, but I think the average is definitely close. I think it's two. It's just, you just find out some guys, you know, for whatever reasons, they just fit. With several teams rolling with a nickel corner in their base coverage lately, how might it affect the way scout evaluates a DB or even a linebacker? Many teams have to be cycling middle of the field coverage to allow shade on receiver one without abandoning the too deep shell look or giving up a cushion. Love to hear your thoughts. That's a pretty nerdy football take. When I was in the NFL, it was much more of a base defense, so your third corner was a bench player. I think nowadays you look at it like you see these guys in college because so many corners, you know, if you're an outside corner, maybe you carry the guy inside. If that team has a, you know, in your conference that you're playing in college has a number one wide receiver and you follow him, so you have a bunch of tape of seeing that guy play inside. I actually think playing inside is a skill. Sometimes an outside corner is not comfortable inside because everything happens quicker, especially when you're playing a true slot wide receiver. That guy does, like an Edelman, does most of his work in like a 5-yard radius. He's going running a quick in, running a quick out. Now, if you're talking about like covering a tight end, you know, if you feel comfortable with your nickel to be able to do a lot of different things, like maybe Isaiah Simmons can, you just leave him out there. And if he needs to lock up against a little wide receiver or he locks up against a tight end. I also think it depends on what coverage you play as a defense. Like you said, if you play a zone coverage, then it's more pressure on your linebackers. But I think all these linebackers are getting drafted now. You're not seeing any of these two-down mics. Every guy can move. You got to be able to cover ground. So I always thought that, you know, a nickel is sinus. You either can do it or not as a corner. Linebackers now are covering so much more in college just because the game spread out. You see them move around. That those guys, if you're just dropping into zone coverage, those guys, you do have to have some instincts to be a good zone coverage, the zone dropper. whether it's a corner or a linebacker, to me it is an instinctive position because you're kind of in no man's land. And you hear coaches talk about this, like if you want to get really geeky, like don't just kill grass, don't just be a robot. Like three back pedals back, 5 yards to the right. Like, no, you know, be a player, you know? And it's a challenging position to evaluate. I think it's why you see so many linebackers and so many defensive backs not be good pros, because there's a huge projection element to it. Last episode, you said that Jalen Hurts could be a starting running back on a lot of teams. I brought that opinion to a group and backed it up with facts like his 40 time good size for a running back and how his TD and rushing totals were more than Swift, Akers, and Clyde. Where do you think Hurts would have been ranked as a running back prospect, and would he been drafted? Like if he had just changed his position to running back, I think he would have been in the second or third round, because I think he could now, probably not in the second round. I mean, his value for the Eagles is still quarterback, but I would have taken him in the third round as just an athlete. Remember, we used to see a lot more quote unquote athletes picked back in the day, back when guys like you knew the guy like Antoine Randle L couldn't play quarterback. You'd be like, yeah, we'll just draft him in the third round. Just be an athlete. It doesn't happen as much now because you like these hybrid positions. And you're like, well, we can put him in Wildcat and he can still throw a little bit. He was an elite production guy in the SEC as a runner, and just his size, like you say, his physicality, he ain't scared. Like, he ain't not a wuss. So I had a friend probably in about October. I remember like Oklahoma was on and he was just texting me about it. He's like, God, I think this guy could be a starting running back. Now, he got better as a thrower. But yeah, I mean, I think Jalen Hurts is a very, very dynamic runner. Like, Lamar's a dynamic runner because he's like the fastest guy in the field. I mean, he has elite speed. When you watch Jalen run, it's like he's got like a little Le'Veon Bell to him. Like, you know, he waits for angles and then he hits a corner. Like, he's a natural with a ball in his hands. I mean, a natural. I'm a big fan of the athlete and the prospect. Now, it's risky, like I said, but I understand the risk from the Eagles. Appreciate everyone listening. Just keep you entertained during quarantine. We'll just keep on swinging. The stories might slow down a little bit. So I got some off-season projects. Keep sliding up in those DMs. At John Middlecoff is my Instagram handle. You're welcome to come on in and ask me anything you want. Adios. Have a good week. See you later. Peace.